Hey there. Welcome to Splinters. This is Gary Rogowski. Thank you for joining me. I know I've been vacant. There's been a vacancy in my brain. No, I've just been busy and haven't gotten back to you. So my apologies. Here we are with a topic near and dear to my heart, talking about shops. It was, oh golly, 4 years ago when I moved out to Lisle here and said, boy, this is my fifth shop that I'm setting up. This is my fifth. And I've had some small interludes, a shop there on McAdam for a little while, an old barn that finally burned down, and then over at John's shop in the basement there, I'd be building stuff, and John built kitchen cabinets, and over on the other side of the shop would be his finisher walking around in a cloud of lacquer dust. And lacquer smoke, I don't know what you mist, I guess, is heavier than air. So you could barely see his legs because there was so much lacquer in the air. Lovely environment. Lovely place. There's actually a place in Portland in the summertime when you're driving on the freeway, which is lower than the surrounding hills. If I'm driving with the windows open, I go, yep, someone's shooting lacquer here. Somewhere in this neighborhood, because you can smell it. It's got that sweet, sickly kind of smell. Anyways, I've had some different shops over the years. I started in a basement shop. You don't even measure the square footage in something that small. Two L's. I had two right angle turns to get into it, so a piece of plywood was impossible. I could get half sheets down. I got my bandsaw down there. Got my radial arm saw down there. I don't know if I had my drill press then. I don't think I did. Giant octopus furnace down in the basement that I shared space with. And just an old servant's house behind a grand old Portland house. Right near the rail yards in southeast Portland, you can hear the cars mating at night, slamming into one another. Anyway, that was my first shop. Tiny, tiny space. Always 54 degrees. Beautiful, consistent, always 54 degrees. And I was just starting out, so I would take out my thermometer and put the little cotton sock on it and spin it around to check the humidity level. And it was always, 50%, 52% humidity. It was very consistent down there. So it was, in many respects, very, very good for a shop. A little cool, but I was young. I could bundle up. I was used to it. And then my next shop was a 600 square foot garage that was being used when we bought it as a garage for working on diesel trucks. So it had a certain aroma to the place. It was gigantic by comparison to where I had been. Big double wide door, which I pulled up and down to get in and out of for a year or more, I think, before I finally cut a man door into it and never opened it again. It was quite a change. Concrete floors, which I hated. I mean, the basement shop was concrete, but yeah, walking on concrete all day long. It's cold. It's damp. I put sheets of plywood down to help with that. It helped a little bit. But that was my second shop. And then I bounced around for a little bit to the barn and to John's shop and finally ended up at the old Barker building, which was this giant old furniture factory down in Sullivan's Gulch, which is where that freeway was I just mentioned. We were down in the gulch. People didn't know how to find me and drive by on 28th and never find me. But we were down under the freeway and past the railroad tracks. And back in the 40s, it was a factory for making hospital and restaurant furniture and that sort of stuff, cranking out tons of furniture. And it had been converted by Joe Weston, who had worked there as a boy, the story went, that he had worked there as a kid and bought it for $1 million back in the 60s, probably. And they converted one space to woodworking shops and then divided that space up. It must have been wide open. There was tread plate. So maybe there was a hallway there, but there was definitely tread plate down for getting things from the elevator and running it down the hall. When Bridge City Tools brought in their first CNC machine, we all stood out at Thad's shop to see if the floor was going to collapse. It didn't, happily, but when they dragged the CNC down to Bridge City Tools, it creased the tread plate. There was a crease left in the tread plate. It was heavy. It was very heavy, but what a space. I had 1,600 square feet there, and that was luxurious. I could let stuff pile up everywhere, and I did. And then I took over the next space when I started the studio and started teaching classes. And my power came from across the hall, one leg, and another leg came from downstairs, three bays over. It was quite a place. Quite a place. From there, I went to the studio building in the southeast side of Portland, Central East Side Industrial District. And it was a that building, I took it back in the county records back into the 30s. The county records are really tough to figure out. So that was a day of research. But I took it back as far as the mid-30s, where it had been East Side Storage. That's what it was called, East Side Storage. And the building was built in 1906, and the building next to it in 1908. They communicated with each other. There was a place that had been bricked over on the main floor. You could see where there had been a doorway. The other building had a ramp down into the basement, and there was a door between the two buildings in the basement. And I'm convinced that horses came in one side and went out the other back in, 1910s, 1920s. That was completely plausible to me. So that building was a grand space. That was a grand space. I remember being in there and trying to decide whether to buy it. And both buildings were for sale. They housed I'm not kidding, an S&M factory. They made whips and chains and all sorts of things. Nice folks working there, but their product was a little strange. Restraints. But both buildings were for sale, but they were willing to separate them, and I bought one of them. I was lamenting the fact that I didn't have a brick wall like the other building did, and my realtor pointed out that I did have a brick wall. It just was painted. So I had the place sandblasted the brick wall, sandblasted the trusses to reveal those, take the grimy paint off. Well, it was what a mess. A lot of work to get that building up to snuff. A lot of work to get that thing. It is a working shop. And it had a concrete floor and a basement, full basement. So there's 5,000 square feet and then another 5,000 square feet underneath it. And underneath, as I would walk up the stairs, I realized there's a subfloor under this concrete, not just, one by or something. It's a full, like, 2.25-inch thick material. So Bill, my contractor at the time, and I drilled some pilot holes to see how deep this concrete was. And we kind of were over near the wall, and it was about 3 inches thick. We thought, that's not bad. So let's make a cut across the length of the floor, 50 feet wide. Let's make that cut, and we'll pull up that concrete. Well, the subfloor didn't exist everywhere, so I had to replace some of that. But it was so nice to walk on. Not always flat, but so nice to walk on. So nice that I decided I was going to make my bench area wood as well. So we got another cut made and got rid of that concrete. I can't tell you what a difference that makes in your demeanor throughout a day when you're walking on wood instead of concrete. And the other fact is, we all know that concrete is magnetic with tool steel. So your tools will jump off your bench to their death onto the floor with the concrete floor. It's just a fact. So I kept concrete for a quarter of the shop for the machinery, but everything else you could walk on wood. And that was one of the best decisions I made. I put in skylights on the north side so I could get consistent light, and that was a good decision, except when the crows were pecking at it. But that was a good decision. That was a great shop. And then I moved out here. So I went from 10,000 square feet to 600 square feet. And it only pointed out to me that I'm not very good at math. So it's been a challenge. 600 square feet now seems so tiny. But that's because I just filled it up with so much stuff. I had so much stuff in 10,000 square feet that moving it was, well, it was a challenge. But that, perhaps another time I'll tell you about that. But as over this, these last few years, as I've negotiated the piles of stuff and made racks and filled up two bedrooms in the house with tools and wood, I finally realized that was the only way out. I realized a truth that is easily forgotten, or was easily forgotten by me. And that is that having a place to work is important to my well-being. Having a place, having a shop where I can take myself, even if I'm just fussing about or sharpening or something, it's important. And not just in the precarious days we passed through recently or are facing, but wanting to escape the madness of the world for some alone time every day is very important to me. Perhaps the most sane thing that I can do in a day. And I think the ability to go somewhere, to work by oneself, be it on one's sketches, your sewing, my sharpening, it's not just a 21st century need. This is a time when we can come into a dialogue, a dialogue with our hands and minds that staring at a computer screen and a telephone just does not yield. Try as you might, that sense of satisfaction from writing a well-crafted email or playing a winning hand of solitaire or winning at chess, as I do, and lose, is just not quite the same as mending that broken chair leg or drawing in the flowers in your yard or fixing that tune in your head with a musical bridge that you've sought after for so long to complete that idea. That's a different feeling. That's a different sense of completion than working on a computer screen. And I think this combination of quiet, time alone, using our hands to make something tangible, and the challenges faced that we can overcome in doing it, it gives us some contentment. Now, I understand if you are a woodworker, there is also the opportunity to increase one's storehouse of swear words when something breaks, as it inevitably does, or the wood goes wonky on you, it tears out when you don't expect it to, or tears out when you expect it to, and you just said, oh, I'm going to try it. And yet, if you're in that proper space of awareness, it doesn't matter. The accidental cuts, the forgotten tool that's across the shop that I took across the shop and then sat down and walked away from, or the problem solving that must arise throughout the day, these are all a part of the time being spent in the shop. And though I like milling lumber and fitting tenons and sanding and shaping boards, none of those compare to making. Well, I made a handle one Sunday afternoon. I was up at Arts and Crafts teaching and I was managing shop hours that day and heard that Fat Boy, our cat, had finally died. And so I took the time for myself in his memory and I made a door pull that graced my tool cabinet for years and I pulled it off and put it inside my house now. And it still reminds me of that good-natured, if gluttonous, calico cat. He was a good boy. Time spent in the shop graces our lives. So bear that in mind. I think there's, well, I will tell you in truth, the things I like doing best are for myself that I put in the shop. A set of drawers, a sharpening table, bench hooks, push sticks. I can't throw some of them out. I mean, they've been with me a long time. They still do the job. I love seeing and having them. And I love having made them. They serve a purpose. I just read this. I'm in the process of reading, but I just read this one essay by Wendell Berry. And he's talking about this farming, fictional farming community in Kentucky. And he's talking about having made the tools that you use and what that brings to mind as you do it. And there's a lot to be said for that. And what he says is this. When he needed a rope, he braided a perfectly adequate one with salvaged baler twine. He thus maintained a greater intimacy between himself and the things he wore and used. Was more all of a piece than anybody else Andy ever knew. So I, as I mentioned, I 4 or 5 years ago when I first moved out here, I said, I'm setting up shop again. So what are the things that are important? So I'm putting together a video series that's going to start in September called Setting Up Shop. And it doesn't really matter if you have a shop already, because I think that shops are, Can I use this? Shops are a movable feast. They are constantly in flux. Things are changing. Patterns go up on the wall. Walls come up or down as you go. Oh, you know what I need here? I need this. I turned my chops on 90 degrees in the shop a couple of weeks ago, months ago. And I went, oh, that makes such a difference. And it makes so much sense. So I'm going to talk about the ideas that I use in setting up my shop and that I think will help you in setting up yours or fine-tuning yours. Oh, I've got a shop already. I know everything I need to know. Yeah, maybe. But there's some stuff that I've learned that I'll share with the group, and I hope you'll join us. So it'll start in September, as I mentioned. I'm calling it a video series. There's 5 chapters in this series. They are shop flow, hand tool kit, machinery for small shops, concepts of woodworking, and strategies for building. The first is shop flow. How do you set up the shop to allow for material to move in and out of your shop? I got to tell you a story real quick. When Mark, the founder of the joinery in Portland, moved, he was in the same complex as I was on 28th, but he was down the ways. And he found a new building, sort of in that same industrial district, southeast. But you could go into the shop and see where the material came in, and then it moved to the joinery, and then assembly, and then finishing. It moved in sort of a circular shape throughout the space. That was a very conscious decision on his part to keep that flow, start that flow and maintain it. And that really makes a difference in any shop, no matter how large or small. So shop flow is the first chapter, and I talk about the concept of flow itself, but also buying tools and placement, lighting, electricals, the size of your door, little things, cabinets, tool storage, makes a big difference. It really makes a big difference knowing where your tools are. And I think that's one of the things that I meant to mention this earlier. It's a place where you know where everything is. Where's the world outside those doors? It's chaos. Inside your shop, it's rational. It's orderly. You may not be able to find things still, but that's your goal. Yesterday, I've been working, and I just went into the shop just to clean up, just to put things back where I could find them. That's a big deal. Anyway, shop flow is a big one. And then a hand tool kit. We could spend days and days on that, but we're going to spend, 4 lectures on that, and it's about cutting tools and shaping tools and holding tools, lots to talk about. You may have tools, but they may not be the right ones. And we'll talk about buying them and tuning them, some of the things that you need for holding things when working with hand tools. And the next chapter is going to be on machinery for small shops, and I don't include the table saw. There are tools, and they need to be set up in a particular way, I think, to get the best use out of them. And then concepts of woodworking, flatness, sharpness, smooth. These are things that, become a part of our, not just our vocabulary, but a part of our daily routine. What do they mean? How far do you go with these things? What kind of work do you do? It's fascinating. When I got here and I couldn't make pieces of wood the size I wanted, I realized how important that ability was to be able to make a piece of wood out of another piece of wood to a particular size. There's some really interesting concepts that we're going to talk about. And finally, we're going to talk about strategies for building. What are the things you need to think about? So for me, this really includes stations in the shop. So I have a sharpening station. In this shop, I don't have space, although I'm making it, getting there, for a gluing station. But I also will show you how to make sawhorses for assembly platforms. I have 2 sets of sawhorses, 18-inch and 29-inch, for different kinds of work. And they are lightweight, made with materials from Home Depot. I will take you through how to build them. And they may be put away for long periods of time, but when you need them, man, they are so handy to have. They really are. I've built some major pieces on my platforms, on my little sawhorses, my 18-inch, and they are invaluable. Just can't live without them. Yes, I have a bench. But my bench needs to hold my tools, my drawings, my coffee cup, other things, right? I need to build somewhere else. And that's such an important strategy, I think, for building. What's going to happen with each of the lectures is that there'll be a project. And we'll build a small project or a larger one sometimes later on in the year. But it's going to be, I'll do a small demonstration for a period of time. We'll see how it works out, 20 minutes or so. And then you go ahead and build that thing. And these are things you'll want around your shop. You may think you have everything you need, and maybe you do, but I've got some items I think that'll help. That will really help. So please check out information on our homepage, northwestwoodworking.com. Check that out. It's called Setting Up Shop, and you can request more information. Just fill out the request form, and I'll send you information on the video lecture series. We'll start on September 30th, and then 2 weeks later, our next class, October 14th. So every 2 weeks, we'll have class with a Q&A session tacked on to the end of it so you can ask questions and run through into, I think we finish up in late June. I hope you'll join me. And check out as well our online mastery program. We're going to be entering our fifth year on this. I can't believe it. But we are. And it's been great. It's been really great. And it's a program that teaches techniques and design. It's about designing your own furniture and building it. So that's been great as well. Thank you for joining me once again. I appreciate it. If you want to support this endeavor, go to coffee.com and check that out. Please check out our online videos that are available from past lectures, sharpening, milling lumber, and various other topics. We've got a pretty wide library there. So check that out. Stay in touch. Thanks again. Take care. Bye-bye.